Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life. Hi, everyone. This is Pei from the Faith and Life team at St. Andrew's Cathedral. I'll be helping Jenny today to host this podcast. And we have in our studio today Joseph and Li Ping. They have been married for 18 years, and they have an army of five boys, three biological sons and two foster sons, within the age range of 7 to 17. So quite an army. Joseph is a co-founder and CEO of a mobile security startup and provides solutions for the banks and government. And Li Ping, who studied psychology, has also graduated from Trinity Theological College with an MDiv, and she's applying to enter full-time pastoral ministry in the Methodist Church. So welcome, Joseph and Li Ping. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Okay, so first question, I think everyone would want to know, what is fostering exactly, and maybe even, you know, why foster as opposed to adoption, which maybe people are a bit more familiar with?
Fostering is actually a temporary care arrangement, unlike adoption, which is permanent. So in fostering, the children actually remain the legal children of their natural parents, whereas adoption is a legal process whereby the child takes on the natural rights natural children of the family. So in fostering, the ultimate goal is to help these children reintegrate back with their natural family when the family is ready to do so. So it's temporary, unlike adoption, which, you know, the child is permanently your own natural child.
Right. Yeah. So I noticed that the numbers are rising in terms of families trying out fostering in Singapore. Mm-hmm. What do you think is happening, nationwide? Why is there an increase in these numbers?
So I think in the past, there was a lot of dependence on children's homes for children who needed some sort of temporary care arrangement. But I think after a number of years, they found that the studies had shown that these children tend to do better in foster homes with families rather than in institutional homes in a kind of a group care setting. Mm. So because of that, in the past few years, the Ministry of Social and Family Development has been raising awareness of fostering and trying to recruit more foster parents to be able to take on these vulnerable children into their homes so that we can move towards most of them being in foster homes rather than in institutional homes.
Okay, so it was an active sort of effort.
That's right.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe, onto your own personal journey, what's led you guys to take this plunge? You know, was it a huge step? Was it a very natural progression that God was just doing something in your life and at that point and boom, it happened? Or how would you, yeah.
Yeah, so I think we first started considering fostering seriously when we heard about it from, I think, Vivian Ng, who spoke at our church about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And she, at the time, was the chief psychologist at MSF.
Okay.
And she actually worships at Wesley Methodist Church. And this was around the time that MSF was trying to raise awareness of fostering as well. And I think we were really struck that this was something that we saw a need for. And we felt that as a family, we could reach out to such children and provide such a home for them. We later attended a tea session conducted by a group called Home for Good in Singapore, which is an informal network of Christian foster parents. And I think that's where we were really moved by the sharing by one of the existing foster parents at the time on really what they were doing to help a foster child in their own lives.
I mean, would you say there was a lot of dialogue between the two of you, just back and forth, like, should we do this, should we not? Or was it just a very easy decision?
Well, we both were at church that day when we first heard the sharing by Vivian.
Oh, you know, okay.
And I think we were both independently moved by it and both open to exploring. And so that's why when I checked with him, you know, I said, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think? You know, he said, okay. So we signed up for the tea session. And then when we both went for the tea session, I think we were also, again, similarly moved by the need and what this ministry could do.
So it was a very... like just from the start, almost, you were both in the room.
In a way, then, I mean, neither one of us had to convince the other about...
And bug.
Yeah. The need to do it. But as to actually doing it is another matter. Yeah. So maybe I just want to rewind a little bit about fostering also versus adoption.
Right.
Very often people go into adoption wanting to find a child for their family.
Mm.
So the need comes from, I want a child. And so I go looking for a child to bring into my family. Fostering, it always comes from the need of the child. These children come into the care of the state because no one can care for them in their own homes. And usually the state has already exhausted all the natural networks. So if parents can't, then they look for auntie, uncle, etc. And only if there's nobody suitable found, then they come into the care of the state. After which they either go into an institution or they get placed in foster care. Right now, majority actually go into institutional care, unfortunately, because there just aren't enough foster carers. So if you want to talk about fostering versus adoption, the critical need right now really is for foster carers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so because of the circumstance under which they come into care of the state, many come with... from very adverse background.
Mm.
So either they have been abused or neglected.
Okay.
Very often the home was either dysfunctional or unstable. And so they often come with a certain measure of trauma.
Yeah.
Even if it was somewhat normal, the fact that they are removed from their natural family is trauma itself.
Right.
Yeah. And so what you have is kids coming in who are really not just needing a family, but they already come with a lot of difficult early life experiences.
Yeah, it's almost like a protective measure, right?
Yes.
Because of the trauma, like you said. So
yes.
It's quite different from adoption in that sense. I mean, adoption will have its own challenges.
So even adoption, but there are kind of two categories. There are those that are, I want to adopt, and very often they go and they look for the babies because they're starting, they're new, I want to raise the child from birth. Whereas those that... they're looking from the needs of the child. Very often they see this child needs a family. And in this child's case, perhaps adoption is the better answer. And so they end up adopting that child.
Right.
Yeah. And so there are some foster carers that end up going down that route because their natural family has given up the rights to them or cannot be found. And so they eventually get adopted.
Okay. Yeah. Is this a large number though?
No,
or is
no.
It very tiny?
It's the exception more than the rule.
It's the exception. Okay.
Yeah. So back to our own story. Even though both of us were kind of on board in the mind. For me, the heart saying yes and the flesh saying yes took almost a year.
Okay.
I had a lot of fears about whether we could do this. At that time, I already had three boys, and it's not like I'm very free, you know. And so I wrestled with it for quite a while. So for me, the turning point came one night when I was putting our boys to bed, and usually we have a certain bedtime routine. And at that time, I was singing Jesus Loves Me to them. And so it actually has a few stanzas, and the final stanza goes something like this, if you don't mind me singing it. Jesus loves me, He will stay close beside me all the way. He's prepared a home for me, and someday His face I'll see. Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. The Bible tells me so. So I think that night, as I was singing that, like my usual routine, I actually almost couldn't finish singing the song because it suddenly struck me that the words about, you know, Jesus preparing a home for me, it's kind of like the unspoken prayer of many of these kids. They don't know, but that's actually what they really want and they desire, to have a family to belong to. So I think that was the kind of the final push that I sense God is saying, do this for me. And so we agreed.
Interesting how it's always those simple songs that we know and we know and we know. And then God just brings this fresh remind, like drives it in even a whole lot more.
Yeah.
So speaking of the challenges of the journey, right? What are some of the perceived versus actual. Like, I think some would imagine, oh, you have to have all your ducks in a row and prepare this much money. You're going to be married, have been parents for 10 years, and then you can foster. You're ready. Mm. How would you speak to some of those wondering about what are the actual challenges and, you know, what is just imagined, I suppose?
I guess even just first and foremost from a Christian perspective, I think we felt that we didn't want to just go through life with our kids being very inward focused. We wanted to make sure that they actually understood what it meant to do ministry on a day-to-day basis. And interestingly enough, as you know, as an entrepreneur with a startup, it was actually quite difficult for me to find the time, kind of like on a weekly basis, to bring my kids to maybe serve in a, you know, like a senior's home, or to, you know, perform some other regular service kind of ministry together. And really, I felt that fostering was a very good way to bring the kids along and really do something together as a family, okay, where they could actually see what that kind of ministry looked like realistically on a day-to-day basis.
So walk with dad.
Yeah, that's right.
Mentor you even.
So I think first and foremost, you know, we didn't enter this thinking, oh, we are perfect family. You know, we are with this perfect home, but we really see this as something that, you know, we want to do life together as a family and with these foster children as well. And there will be challenges. Liping mentioned that, you know, very often they come in with some trauma. They may have emotional issues or behavioral issues, and we are not always perfect in how we deal with that, and we'll tell them, look, you know, we are not perfect either, but we love you, and, you know, let's figure this out together. And I think that's the most important thing, both for the foster children as well as for our own children, to see that, you know, you don't need to be a perfect human being, a perfect Christian, in order to do ministry, right? So I think that's the most important thing. Of course, MSF does try to make sure that, you know, as a family, as a home, you do have a relatively stable environment. Again, they're not asking for perfection. They do look for, if you are married, that you should have a fairly stable marriage. I think there's a minimum age of 25 years old. They do look for some experience with children. So if you don't have children of your own, but you've at least taken care of maybe nieces or nephews, or maybe in a professional setting, right, that can work as well. But most foster parents would have their own children as well. Some are older, so their children may have grown up already.
So it sounds like being married is a requirement. So
currently,
MSF wouldn't allow singles to foster.
I wouldn't say it's a blanket, no. The preference is for married couples, but I think that exceptions can be made for singles if they do have significant childcaring experience.
Have you seen some singles do fostering, and how's that been?
I have heard of a few.
We've heard of cases.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's... Yeah. Okay.
And even of couples without children, they can
still... Right, like first
time... Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the... Going back to the question of a perceived challenge, this is the one I hear the most, is that the fear of getting too attached. I would not be able to deal with the grief of letting the child go.
Mm.
Yeah. And that is a very, very real concern. However, if I can just share, there's this one fostering advocate that I follow, whose blog I follow. He's called Jason Johnson. And this is kind of how he reframes this concern, that fostering is less about getting a child for your family, like I mentioned earlier, and more about giving your family to a child. So it doesn't mean that we won't get attached, but it does mean that we will no longer let this fear of loving a child leave us, deter us, but rather allow our fear of a child never knowing our love to compel us. And ironically, actually, if you feel attached and grief when a child leaves, it actually means you've done your job. It means that you have loved this child enough, and that child would know it. And really, that's what they need, to be in a place where they're not just a job. This is not just childcare, where you drop them off, you know, and then you just do the basic stuff. It really is welcoming them into your home, into your heart. And that will come with, there will be grief at the end of it. Yeah,
yeah, like it's almost, this is the KPI, right? Let's cry.
Nobody
a cold
works,
word.
Nobody works towards that.
I mean, for those who like, using those terms, it's a good sign, like you're saying, right?
It's
the fruit of having poured into their lives and, maybe the sacrifice and them being vulnerable toward your
That's right.
There should be some separation and grief.
Yeah.
Right?
But every foster parent is different. So I know of some foster parents who, having had to say goodbye, was so difficult that they felt they couldn't continue. And others said, I don't really feel any of that. There's something wrong with me. And I think we're just all different.
Okay.
You know, like I said, so that's not something we strive for, but it's something that can come up along the way.
Okay.
Yeah. I think definitely another big challenge is that the process of fostering itself can be quite difficult. So we've talked about how many of them will come in with some trauma or emotional baggage. And I think that was something that we really had to struggle with the first few months and even the first couple of years of fostering, because it's very different from bringing up your own children. By the time they hit primary school, secondary school, you've had them for many years, they are used to how you deal with them, and you kind of know their issues and kind of the corners and the kinks have been ironed out, right? But for many of these foster children, when they first join your family in particular, firstly, they're not used to your rules. They may not be used to certain types of behaviors that you expect from your own children. And I think it's important as a foster parent to understand their background and to be very patient with them. You will see the fruits of that hard work, but it may not be within 1-2 weeks or 1-2 months. It may be 1-2 years or even longer for certain issues that they present. So I think that's one thing that we've had to learn as well, to really extend that grace to the foster children and accept that, they come from a very different background, very different challenges. And I think when we see that our role as parents is really to just teach and train these children, but of course along the way to make sure that these children also feel supported and loved so that they can really feel like this is a safe place that they can just be accepted within a family as well. So that definitely there are challenges and there are differences in how we've had to learn to treat the foster children compared to what we would have expected of our own children as well. That's not to say that we lower our standards. We still train our foster children to understand what are right and acceptable behaviors and what is not acceptable, what they should try to avoid doing.
Right.
But very often there are difficulties for them in trying to really apply those behaviors, whether at home or in school or in other settings.
Right.
And sometimes it's, I think as Singaporean parents, it's very easy to think, oh, why are they like that? I expect them to be like this and to expect kind of perfection from very early on.
Fall in line.
Yeah, that's right. So we have had to learn that is not always possible, especially very early on. And I think it is difficult sometimes for, the teachers or other people around their lives as well. But at the same time, as they also understand the background of the kids, we've seen a lot of those around us, within our friends, to really come alongside us as well and help them kind of learn, but also feel accepted in those environments.
So I'm sure there was a process, speaking of all this, once fostering has started, what about before, like with your own kids? What is that prep? What does it look like? How far in advance did you have to start preparing your own boys? And can you share maybe a bit about that?
It's very important that everyone in the family is on board, because you're welcoming the child into the whole family. And so all the relationships will be affected. And so from the time we started thinking about it, we began asking our kids about what they thought. I guess they were young and they don't have any experience of fostering. So to them, it's just having more playmates. And so they were very positive from the start.
Yes.
So that was good. We also had a helper. And so it was very important that our helper was on board.
Oh, right.
So for her, she came from a country where she saw children in need and saw the good that something like fostering or adoption could do. And so she was willing to do this together with us. Yeah, we also talked a bit to our extended families, but less so to get approval, but more to kind of prepare them for it. And the truth is that they did have quite a bit of concerns in the beginning, which is very natural.
Would this be your both sets of parents
both
or
sets?
More?
Both sets. I think just some worries about how this would impact our kids.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not like, oh, yay, let's go ahead and do this. Because this is pretty foreign to most people.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But I think within the immediate family, the people that the child will be in contact with on a regular basis have to be on board and agree that this is something they want to do. And so that's where we then began to try and give more accurate information. We said it won't be just playing all the time. You know, these children may not be so nice sometimes, right? And you have to kind of learn to deal with that. Yeah. So for us, I think that process took, I can't remember how long. It took about a year.
Yeah. Just because, so there is a process where you do need to go through a vetting process.
Okay.
MSF will interview you, come to your home, make sure you have grills in your windows if you are living on a high floor. Mm. Of course, interview every family member.
So the kids even.
That's right, including
the
grandparents
and the...
Well, only they're living in your home with
you. Okay.
So there's a very... There's a very thorough process with that.
Yeah.
Even after you're vetted, of course, it takes time for them to say, oh, there's this child, can you take them in?
Mm.
So that process may take several months.
Okay.
But, you know, we did use that time to engage our children as well.
Yeah.
You know, as Liping said, it's making sure that they understood really the cost of fostering. That it wasn't just all fun and games, but there would be a real cost in terms of their own convenience. You know, we were telling them, your homework might be torn up, they might take your toys, they might fight with you, squabble with you. But yeah, sure, I think we want to do this. But we also wanted to make sure that they understood that this was really a ministry that we wanted to do together as a family. So I think it was a good process. And even after the foster kid came in, they were still very supportive and, you know, they did continue to try their best and all that. So I think that was important to really make sure we did this together as a family. And it's not just, oh, mommy, daddy decided to do this and now to suffer for it, right? But they really understood and bought into doing this as a family.
Wow. So this is a would you say this is a very standard preparation for Christian foster parents? Or is this something that the Lord just gave you all the wisdom to, you know, like He just pointed you at these...
Well, I think just in the application process, which goes through MSF or one of the fostering agencies, they will ask, you know, how do are your family members agreeable with this? So I think already in that process, it kind of points you to what needs to be done. But definitely for us as a Christian family, we see this as a ministry as well. But we
which
don't want to
paint. Drives that. It just motivates everybody, right?
But we don't want to paint like a rose-colored version of it, you know. I mean, we will talk to our kids, but, you know, they'll hear a lot of stuff and they only remember a little bit.
Yeah.
So a lot of the work
and
is
the humans
when,
and they get jealous and maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, there was a lot of sibling rivalry in the beginning because my boys are close to me. And so there was a lot of work to be done in terms of allaying fears and trying to be as fair as possible, you know. So, for example, we try to really treat our foster children like our own. So one thing we do is that we take each of them out on one-on-one dinner dates and we take turns doing that.
Oh,
yeah. So every boy
nice.
Knows that he will have one-on-one time with both mommy and daddy.
So no need to jostle and...
Exactly. Until today, they fight to sit on my left and right during meal time. Until today, you know. So we have to then have some kind of a system where it's fair, you know.
Okay,
today is
okay.
your turn, then tomorrow is someone else's turn.
That's very sweet.
But
kids
because,
jostling to sit next to their parents in this day and age, that's very sweet.
Yeah, but because fostering can be quite difficult, and I think we saw that we wanted to make sure that we would be available as a family for as long as the foster child or children needed us. And that's why we really spent a lot of time with that. There have been cases of fostering placement breakdowns because there's just been too much difficulty dealing with the child or, you know, issues that arise because of the placement. And sometimes it really can be very traumatic and difficult for the foster parents as well. So MSF, of course, tries to provide a lot of training. There's a huge amount of support from the social workers, psychologists, and so on. But yeah, we knew that this was going to be difficult and we wanted to make sure that we did everything we could, both before and during the process to give it the best chance of success.
So maybe just to wrap things up, you can talk about how the church can come in and support, you know, the community can help with some of the challenges. Because I think as much as you prepare, even if MSF gives you a 100-page manual, there will be very real, you know, these are lives, not technology. So what can other believers and the church community do?
Fostering is really something that you cannot go on your own family. So it's very important to have a support network. And so we talk about wraparound kind of care. So the idea that the foster family is being wrapped around by a community that
nice
provides support in different ways. So firstly, of course, prayer. I mean, as I mentioned, fostering is really a ministry, both of the Lord as well as to the Lord. You know, so as a ministry of the Lord, it's not something that we should ever think we do on our own strength. Mm. If we try to do that, we will fail. And so every day as Christians, we need to draw on the Lord's strength to do it. And having a community to journey, to cry with, to pray with is absolutely essential. And also praying for the children because of they really do face many, many difficulties. Other than the emotional, behavioral side, often academically, they are very far behind. And that is a reality in our daily life, you know. And so there is a lot of help needed there. Respite care is one big area. So respite care is an even more temporary form of care where if a foster family needs to go on a holiday or go somewhere and the foster child can't come along, either because the natural family doesn't agree to it or just for whatever reason, then they are placed with a respite care family. So we've done that for other kids as well. So this can range anywhere from just even a couple of hours to a day, a few days, a few weeks, even a couple of months. So it's a good way to relieve the regular foster family, but also a good way for people to test water, to see what is it like inviting a stranger into my home, and they can try that with respite care. Money, I mean, although we get monthly allowance from MSF, it's just a kind of a blanket amount, but there are many things, for example, enrichment activities that, you know, would require more money. So if people want to help, they can. Transportation is a very big one because very often when children are placed in our care, they may continue to go to their original schools, which may be far from our home. So like in our case, when our first foster child came, his school was about half an hour away from my home. And so ferrying him back and forth was very, very tiring. And so I had a church friend who helped to do that 2 to 3 times a week.
Oh, wow.
And it's a huge help. Until today, she still brings him for enrichment class once a week, has lunch with him. So it's not just the transport, but it's the friendship and building of bonds. Mm. Another area is befriending, you know, so bring the child out for an outing, just meeting them once a week to befriend, maybe along the way give tuition. So educational support is another big area.
And this all happens very organically through your church?
Yeah,
or
so either you can recruit your own friends to do it, or sometimes MSF will arrange for it.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Other areas would be professional services. For example, we have a friend who's a play therapist, is offering that to our children as well. And I think finally, the church really is that larger family. The truth is, when these foster kids come to stay in our home and come to our churches, they can pose a challenge for the church community. They're not going to be obedient. They're not going to be easy. And so it's very hard for the Sunday school teachers and other kids. And so really, but if the church is a place which welcomes everyone, then we really need the help of the larger church to be understanding and patient with these kids. And so like our cell group and other church mates form that larger family for these children. And it's part of their healing process. The more positive bonds they have, the quicker they heal.
All that depleted is slowly filled up.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on this?
So I think, you know, fostering is definitely quite a difficult process. So I think for potential foster parents considering to come on board a fostering scheme, it's also important to start thinking about the community that they want to build around themselves.
Mm.
So I think many potential foster parents are turned off by, you know, the amount of work or challenge that they'll face. But I think if you really believe that this is something that you're called to do, don't see it as something that you're going to do yourself, right? Look at your friends, your cell group mates, your church mates around you, Sunday school teachers, and really pull them alongside you and just don't be afraid to ask for help. That's one thing that we realized very early on, right? It's like, okay, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do that? And it really helps, you know, make it a lot more practically manageable for us on a day-to-day basis. I think as foster parents, you will be dealing with a lot of stuff at home already around kind of the emotional supports, the academics, and so on. But sometimes it's just a lot of these practical issues around, and even that befriender kind of support during the week or even on Sunday during Sunday schools and so on. So I think both for individual foster parents to be aware and not be afraid to ask, for churches that are thinking of what they can do to provide this kind of stuff, obviously even just driving awareness of this within their own churches and kind of seeing how they can support their existing foster parents is something that we can do as a church community as well.
Okay.
So both of us are actually part of Home for Good Singapore, which is an informal network of Christian foster carers.
Ah, okay. I was going to ask about resources.
Yeah, so we're kind of like a support network, but we are also, we advocate for both fostering and adoption. And so we hold regular tea sessions about once a quarter, which allows people who want to find out more to come and hear from a real foster family and just to have their questions answered. So if people are interested, they can look up our Facebook page, Home for Good Singapore, or our webpage. The Facebook page is more updated, I think.
As always, social media. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I think we'll be wrapping up here and really appreciate that was a very candid sharing of your own journey. You even sang a song that moved you toward fostering. So we really appreciate you taking the time to come and just share your journey with us. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.